New Earth Podcast is supported by listeners like you. If you'd like to donate or support the show, head on over to patreon.com/New Earth, and that's spelled N-U-Earth. As a Patreon member, you'll also receive bonus episodes with fellow guests, monthly virtual gatherings with me, and any book giveaways that we're doing for the month. Become a Patreon subscriber today and receive one of our New Earth stickers designed by Vero Coya. Hey tribe, it's Nixie Marie. You're listening to New Earth, a podcast where each week we explore the relationship between spirituality and sustainability and how these topics play an important role in the evolution of humankind. Together, we aim to remember our connection with Mother Nature to heal ourselves and save our planet. Well, hello, fellow Rainbow Warriors. Welcome back to a lovely week here in our New Earth community and tribe. I'm so filled up. I got back from Costa Rica a couple days ago, and we're back in Mexico, in Baja, and I've been spending a lot of time these last few days really integrating the medicine from the jungle, because, man, Mother Earth, she is a powerhouse of beauty, and I am just still taken back by her mighty magnificence. And it's been a while since I've seen anything like that. I mean, I've been to Thailand. I've been traveling the last couple of years quite a bit, but something about Costa Rica, man, they're doing it right over there. And it's such a great model for the New Earth and what we're really exploring here on the podcast and the conversations that we have been really diving into. So there's many reasons, I guess, why I went to Costa Rica, but we're really manifesting and putting forth intentions for potential land, property, opportunities, ways to grow a eco-village, a community healing retreat center. And so I'm remaining open, as is a community and gathering of people that we are discussing this idea around. And so that was one of the big reasons why we went, but also to see some of our soul tribe. You know, we are sailing, and we don't always get to see our friends. So especially during this COVID time, you really got to get creative with how you see your loved ones. And it has to be very intentional and, of course, intimate. So I do appreciate COVID and the pandemic for those reasons, because it has really initiated so many of us to find that intimacy in our communities. So speaking on intimacy, I just joined Clubhouse. I don't know if you guys are in there yet, but I'm just exploring the new social media app called Clubhouse. It kind of blew up this month. I know they've been in beta mode, and they're launching officially in March. So it is kind of an interesting thing joining, but I wanted to throw that out there because I am over there and I'm intending to explore ways that we can start our own Clubhouse and discuss more more from the podcast. So find me over at Nixie Marie, and I'd love to connect with you. If you have rooms that you've been tuning into, I'd love to hear about them. There's a lot of amazing people on there and a lot of amazing conversations happening, and it really feels like it's the intimacy that we all need right now in the social media platforms. So find me over there. I'd love to meet and gather with you. And today we are going to explore a topic that I've actually been learning a lot about, and it's a topic dear to my heart, to be honest. It's a topic that I get questions about the most, especially inside my course, Sustainable Sacred Space. And I wanted to go deeper on this topic, and in my eyes, it's kind of called imperfect sustainability, and how we can aim for progress over perfection. And then I want to kind of dive into this term that we are using in the environmental space called gatekeeping, and how we can reframe our mindsets around those types of ideals where we're excluding and not inclusively involving every single gender, race, you know, all of our world in a world that is around environmentalism and getting outdoors and having diversity in the outdoors. So we're going to get into those topics today. But before we do, of course, I have a couple announcements, as well as we will go over our spirit animal of the day. And we have a card pull, of course, from our lovely Healing Herbal deck. So I want to start off by saying I have officially announced that we are doing the Sustainable Sacred Space online course now as a self-study option. So we will be doing that all month of January. You have to sign up. It is only $197. So if you are interested in taking the course when I did it live back in I think it was October, then now you are able to take it at your own pace. If you would like to go week by week, it is a 4-week course, but you can take it as long as you need. The only thing is at the end, when you are complete, you get to have a one-on-one session with me and we go over anything in the course, any questions you have and anything like that. So, I wanted to extend that offer out to you all. I know there had been a lot of questions, you know, are you going to be offering the course again? And I will be doing a live course again, but right now I wanted to focus on the self-study version and letting you all know that it is available this month, January, to sign up. So inside that course, you will learn how to cultivate a zero-waste mindset. You will learn the basics of feng shui, how to feng shui your home, especially for this year, Year of the Ox. You'll get a bonus video on how to set up your space for this year specifically. You will also get into how to clear your clutter and what your clutter is telling you. This is one of my favorite things because everything in our home tells us things that we don't know. And it's a deep dive into what your clutter is telling you and how you can heal your relationship with clutter. And the last week is actually diving into the five elements of feng shui: earth, metal, wood, fire, and water, and how to use them in your home, how to use them in your life, and also what element are you? You will learn about that and explore that with our one-on-one session. I'll go over that in your trigram report. And yeah, it's going to be awesome. I hope that you guys, if you are interested, if you have any questions, you know where to find me. You can send me a personal DM over on New Earth Podcast, or you can find me over on in Clubhouse. So I'd love to offer that up for you guys. Again, that's only $197. So it has reduced the price because it is a self-study option. So hopefully that makes things attainable for anyone who's interested in learning with me. All right. So as I just explored so much in Costa Rica, I was met with a lot of new animals and plants in this mighty kingdom of Mother Earth. But the first one that really popped out in the medicine I wanted to share today is, of course, the monkey. We have chimpanzee monkey medicine for you today on the podcast. And you know, it's really interesting because I hadn't seen a monkey all week long and I was really bummed. I saw one in a tree, like kind of far away, but hadn't seen one up close. And I was thinking, like, this is why I came to Costa Rica. Where are the monkeys? And finally, on our journey back home, we stopped in this place called Capos, and we were on Manuel Antonio Beach, for anyone who knows the area. And there was just all of a sudden monkeys coming out of the jungle like crazy, and they were just exploring and they were coming into some of the restaurants and taking their foods, and it was just so adorable. And I kind of just sat there and received the cuteness and tuned into what they, kind of their mischievousness and their creativeness and their curiosity and just how brilliant they are. And that's part of their medicine, is that they are intelligent beings. I mean, some may think that we evolved from them, and I think it's very possible. I also love the story that I heard once upon a time, that when we evolved from the species of the ape, we ate psychedelic mushrooms. We found these shrooms and eventually it expanded our consciousness, and here we are. So fun little story there, whether you believe it or not. I do love storytelling, and that is one of my favorites. So the medicine of the monkey also relates to languaging and skills and our connection to the forest spirits. They also have a strong problem-solving ability, and they're able to really balance their overall compassion and aggression, which is why we often see them, you know, as pets or able to just kind of sit on our shoulders. But then they can get a little feisty, you know, but they know when to get feisty and they know when to have compassion. So it's a good medicine for us, especially now, to really have that compassion with ourselves, know when to have compassion, know when to release our aggression, and to know when it's appropriate, right? So as far as monkeys go, they are very close to us on this evolutionary scale, and the gifts that they bring when they enter our lives can really, you know, remind us of that simple way that life creates joy. I mean, you look at monkeys monkeying around, and I think of like monkey see, monkey do. They do bring this joy. They're just frolicking around the jungle, they're playing, they're getting into ruckus. And so that to me is what I first tuned into, was that playfulness nature, the curiosity, and how they really express themselves. And they you know, they're just so active. They're so a part of the natural community. I mean, you take monkeys out of their natural habitat, and it doesn't seem right. It feels like they are out of their natural space and they're supposed to be in the wild. And just kind of seeing that in Costa Rica was a reminder of, you know, what's possible when we rewild the earth. And that has been a big, big topic I've been diving into as well. You know, how do we rewild the earth? This is a concept created by many conservationists and eco activists. But recently, David Attenborough, on his Life on Our Planet documentary, which I'm going to tell you more documentaries to watch on this episode today. But he talks about rewilding as the solution to healing our earth. And so being in Costa Rica, seeing the monkeys run wild, the toucans, the macaws, the birds, like all these amazing creatures that are fully wild there, it had me thinking, you know, we need to model our society back to this natural rhythm. And my, you know, in essence, my wild heart and my wild soul felt so, it just felt right there. It felt right in the jungle. It felt connected. I felt so alive. I felt so nourished sitting at the falls, the waterfalls of Costa Rica, and really being able to just experience that alone, I think, is really, really powerful. So if you want to take on the foundations of the monkey and the medicine from them, bring joy to your life, bring playfulness, bring your inner child, and allow for yourself to fully immerse yourself in that playfulness, in that joy, in that experience, so that you are fully free. You know, I feel like monkeys, and they just fly around when I watch them, they just seem so free and they do what they want. They be what they want. There's no ties attached to what they should or shouldn't be. So I hope that medicine serves you well. I certainly have always loved monkeys. I actually call Dumbledore, for those of you guys that know my cat, he has a nickname, Monkey. I don't know why I call him Monkey, but I do. So I do love monkeys, and it's just so cool to see them in the wild. And if anyone's seen a monkey, you know what I'm talking about. It's such a pleasure and such a treat to see them just kind of monkeying around. All right, so we've got our card reading of the day here, and this is actually a card I've never pulled in this deck. It is the Herbal Healing Deck by Sarah Baldwin. This card is called Colt's Foot. It's a root type of herb, and it is presence. So the message of the card is to be presence, and there's a quote that comes in with it. As soon as you honor the present moment, all unhappiness and struggle dissolve, and life begins to flow with joy and ease. Like the monkey. There we go. There's our synchronicity. This is by Eckhart Tolle. That is so beautiful. So the name Colt's Foot is used for multiple species in the Tussilago genus. There is some crossover with the closely related pedicites that sometimes these species are called coltsfoot and other times as butterbur. So these plants have a similar appearance and growing pattern, and their medicinal purpose are comparable. And ultimately, their medicinal purpose is called a cough dispeller. So it really fits this herbal's reputation as nature's primary plant for the lungs, which is really interesting right now because we are working through a virus that has been attacking the lungs. So it is considered a cough sedative that also acts as an expectorant and easing inflammation in the respiratory tract. So cold's foot is a useful treatment for bronchitis, colds, asthma, and laryngitis. So maybe having a little bit of that cold's foot in our medicine cabinet might not be a bad idea this coming year. The fresh root of the cold's foot can also produce a near euphoric experience under the right conditions. It creates a slight numbing sensation in the mouth and has a way of opening one's mind to the present moment. This is done through an awareness of the breath that comes along with the opening of the lungs, and reminding us that the breath is the only function of the body that happens automatically, yet can be consciously controlled at will. So thus it represents the link between our conscious and subconscious minds. And when a cold's foot appears to you, the message is one of presence. Stay centered in your daily life and focus on the present moment whenever possible. Rather than getting stuck in the past or worrying about the future, make everything you do a meditation. Feel the sensation of the water massaging your skin in the shower. Feel your feet as you walk upon the ground. Get out of your head and notice the world around you. Even the mundane comes alive when you experience a true sense of presence. The lungs and the breath are a significant mediator to our overall well-being. According to Lewis Hay, the lungs represent our ability to take in and give out life itself. Lewis Hay has been coming up a lot lately. When we breathe in, we take the gift of life. When we exhale, we give the gift of life. When breath forms of the basis of our symbiotic relationship with plants, we inhale their gift of oxygen and they imbue our gift of carbon dioxide. Have you acknowledged this relationship lately? So this is a great practice to do. You know, if you're outside, you have a moment to tune into nature, is to, when you inhale, you realize you're inhaling the gift of oxygen from the plants. And when you exhale, you give the gift of carbon dioxide. So take some time if you have to go outside and realize this connection, realize this relationship. Tap into this awareness that nature is literally giving you oxygen. And this is why without nature, we will not survive. And without enough nature, we won't survive. So and nature also thrives on our oxygen as well. So it's a symbiotic relationship. And, you know, the other thing about cold's foot is many people have been able to heal themselves of disease, anxiety, and stress through breath work alone. So if you're going through anxiety for me, breath work is 100% my go-to. And of course, I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert in these topics, but I do feel wholeheartedly that the medicine woman, the medicine man is coming back through and through, and we are healing so deeply on a deep level. And that healing requires us to, you know, use modalities, and also if you need to use Western medicine, but exploring new ways, like the gift of breath and using breath work. Some say that Gay Hendricks, who has created an entire healing modality based on releasing emotional blocks through the breath, that breathing is really the key that unlocks a yoga practice, bringing it beyond the realm of simple stretching and to the level of transcendence and oneness. Keeping our focus upon the breath is the basis for many forms of meditation, which increase overall awareness and focus on our daily lives. So any current stress you feel is a result of being out of touch with the present moment. Take that in. Any stress you feel right now in this moment is you being out of touch with the present moment, because your breath brings you back into your body. And maybe you're going through an inconsiderably challenging moment at this time. So allow yourself to feel the emotions, grieve, get angry, feel everything, fully present, and stay with your emotions. Okay, stay with them. Don't let them slip away. Let them be felt. Let them be heard. Sit with the pain. Sit with the anxiety. Sit with the depression. Sit with the sadness. Sit with it and be with it. Stop numbing it, right? Breathe with it. Listen to it. It has a voice. What is it telling you? Another lesson of coltsfoot is to let go of cherished outcomes. The plant is a unique in its flower, so it appears and dies back before the leaves ever form. Things may be happening beneath the surface of your life that cannot be seen at this time. Accept that you are operating without all of the information and release your need to know exactly how things will turn out. Such a good reminder. That saying that life is a journey rather than a destination certainly applies to this moment right now. And I think we can all agree on that one. Life is a journey, not a destination. So if you feel like you're kind of in that obstacle course right now, don't let that take you away from your vision, your goals, your purpose, and why you are here. You know, accept that some form of failure or delay or changes in your course or your creative energy is in alignment with your process. You know, don't take yourself too seriously. Stay with the present. Everything in life is just a moment, and everything, like they always say, is this too shall pass. So let's create that as our mantra today, is this too shall pass. And let's just be with that. You know, this too shall pass. The moments that we are in, the time that we are in, this too shall pass. Remember that. As your medicine. We are experiencing this right now, but this too shall pass. Okay? Let's bring that into our day and share that with someone. Share that with someone you need. And if you feel like this podcast is resonating with you and you know someone who also needs to hear these words, hear the community of our tribe, share this out, please. Like, let people know we are here, that they don't have to go through this alone. Because we can't. We cannot go through this alone. We are moving into the we. We are moving out of the I. We are moving into oneness. We are moving into collective consciousness, coming together, tuning in to our frequencies that bring us all together and rise each other up. And that brings me to our topic, because how that does that, I promise I'll get to it. But today's topic really is dear on my heart around progress over perfection, imperfect sustainability. Because we could go deep into the octopus tentacles of what this means. But whenever people come to me, and you know, I've been on a journey of really practicing new sustainable exercises. I'm now living sustainably on a sailboat and minimal. I'm living with less. Like, there's a lot of things that I've done in my life, and I'm an extremist, so I tend to go for the more extreme things, like, you know, living on a sailboat, which is like 400 square feet with my partner and my cat. But not everybody's path is to do that, and nor should we ever shame anyone for not doing enough, or labeling someone for them being, you know, quote unquote spiritual or sustainable, or shaming them for not showing up in that way. We have to take people off the pedestals and put us all into, like, I see this vision right now of us all sitting in circle, all together, all one. Nobody's the guru other than ourselves, right? So being in relationship with that, what does it actually mean? Imperfect sustainability. I'm going to go into it from an environmental perspective, because this is something that we all must obtain. Nobody in sustainability should ever strive for perfection. In fact, we should never really be striving for perfection in any means. There's always room for progress. There always should be room for growth. In the environmental space, it is getting very overwhelming. There are a lot of things that we can do to save the planet and save the world. But guess what? The first thing that we need to do is tune into ourselves, breathe, listen to our own voices. What is going to serve us the most? Turn off the noise. You know, there's a lot of noise out there. There's a lot of things going on with climate change and climate activists and earth activists, and you listening are on that page because you're a part of our tribe. And we've taken this initiation, this step forward, into committing ourselves to Mother Earth. So we have to get clear on what actually works for us. And I always say, like, start with one thing, because my one thing that I started years and years and years ago has now led me to being able to live with less, minimal, on a boat, just chilling, you know, not feeling attached to all these things that I had. So it takes time, and we're not aiming for perfect sustainability. We cannot all be dressing in sustainable clothing. We cannot all be, you know, zero plastic, zero single-use plastic all the time. We cannot look at other people and put them on a pedestal and say, you know, that they have it all figured out, because we're all learning together. And that's the point, is we are learning together. We have come so far too from where we were. I mean, there has been a lot of growth, whether you think so or not, within our planet and our choices that we make. But at the end of the day, everything that we do to create sustainability or create regeneration with the earth starts with our choices. And so when we make certain choices based on our integrity, our core values of what we stand for, then we give ourselves permission to actually make change. And I'm talking from a place of, like, the world also is not there yet. Like, a lot of us who are forward thinking, we're innovators, we're thinking from a place of the future. I mean, we've got children today. Maybe you have one of these children that are the change. They're coming in with way more awareness. They're coming in with way more tapped inness to what's going on the planet and what needs to change. And so what we should probably be doing right now is turning our ears and listening to the little ones and going, what can we do for you? Because for us is no longer. We are creating, we are regenerating our human race. And we do that by listening to the young ones and the elders. The elders are another big thing that get left out. And they're, you know, we've seen mass genocide happen within our elders and the indigenous tribes time and time again. And in some way, this virus is also attacking the elders. And, you know, we can create all the stories we want from that. But the importance is that we open our ears and listen. And when I ask Mother Earth, oftentimes, how can I serve? How can I show up? How can I change? How can I be the healer? How can I, you know, because I'm always so ambitious with these things. The answer always comes down to just listen. Just listen. Open your ears, be present, breathe, and listen. And when we have those, you know, basic foundational ways of being, it becomes a little easier, because we don't have to be hard on ourselves. Like, oh, I had to drink from that plastic water bottle today because I'm traveling. And quite frankly, that's what happens. I just traveled back from Costa Rica, and I always travel with my water bottle, but you can't go through security with your water bottle full. And that part really irritates me, but I totally get it. You know, there's certain security protocols, but what I think that we need, and this is something I saw back in China, is there's just refill stations for your water. Free water, you go get your water, it's not in a plastic bottle, but we're not there yet, right? So we can't shame others, we can't shame ourselves for buying that plastic water bottle. Maybe instead we keep that bottle, turn it into something. I don't know. I saw also in Costa Rica, I saw a trash can that was created by plastic water bottles, and I just thought that was really cool. There was a lot of ways that they were reusing the plastic, reusing things. And while it doesn't look, you know, bougie and nice, it's reusing stuff that's also important. Today's podcast is brought to you by Clarity, the complete non-toxic, zero-waste, all-natural home cleaning solution, co-founded and created by yours truly.
Clarity naturally cleans your home without using harmful chemicals, protects the environment with zero waste packaging, is convenient and cost-saving by delivering concentrates directly to your door, and best of all, it makes cleaning fun. It's simple and affordable to bring Clarity to your home. Grab one of our zero waste home cleaning kits to get you started, or the ready-to-go all-purpose bottle, and you have everything you need to remove toxic chemicals and plastics from your cleaning ritual. Sign up for a subscription to receive our concentrate refills, and you have everything you need without a trip to the grocery store. Simply visit Clarity, that's spelled Clarity.com, and use the promo code ECOTRIBE for your exclusive 10% off discount. Thank you so much for being part of this New Earth community and making our world a greener place.
I kind of want to get into this other word that we have been, you know, really playing with. I'm like, okay, what is this exploration around gatekeeping, and what does it mean in the environmental space? And something that we really need to stay present to, because this is what it looks like. Now, first of all, the actual term gatekeeping can take on many forms, but generally it refers to the act of limiting a person's access to something, be it by a community, a specific label, or even a diagnosis, because they don't live up to certain standards set by those already initiated. So it could be, example, like a fan club for a band, or the spiritual community, like you have to meditate, you have to have crystals, you have to have your pendulum, you have to have all these things to be described as spiritual. So that's basically gatekeeping. And then in the environmental space, it'd be like, you have to be vegan, you have to wear all sustainable clothes, you have to have zero plastic in your home, the list goes on. And I felt very called to this and dear to my heart, because this totally excludes so many people from this conversation. And then we don't get anywhere. We actually don't get anywhere in sustainability at all, because nobody wants to be a part of those. Not everybody wants to be a part of those clubs. I definitely don't. I don't want to be shamed because I eat meat. I don't want to be shamed because not all of my, Tupperware is glass and beautiful and expensive and bougie. You know, it's like, we have to come back to our center and realize that we're all doing our best. The awareness part is the key, okay? If we are in awareness of our choices, if we are in awareness of that label that we're putting on ourselves, then we can make a different choice. But again, we cannot shame anyone for the limiting access of something that might have more privilege than another. So some other examples, I like these little quotes. I got these actually from another podcast. They're Chicks for Climate, and they posted on their Instagram. I thought this is a really great interpretation. So they have in quotations examples of gatekeeping in the environmental movement. Quote, "You can't call yourself an environmentalist if you eat meat," quote. Fact, veganism and environmentalism are not mutually exclusive. For example, food miles. We all know that the debate over avocados. Also, privilege is a huge barrier in eating vegan. Food apparatus is a barrier or lack of control over meals if you live with parents, etc. Finally, health always prioritizes, and some people cannot forfeit this for veganism. Number two. Quote, "You do not even have a degree in sustainability." So, quote, fact, "Having a degree in any subject is major privilege. You do not need to have a formal education in the environmental space or sustainability to care for the planet. What you do need is passion and care for our planet. Lived experiences teach us so much. Formal education is not the only place that we learn from." I really love this one, because you don't need a certification. You don't need anything to just give a shit. Come on, guys. Go outside and just put your feet on the ground And, you know, again, I mean, sometimes that even comes from privilege, because there's a big space for the white privilege in the environmental space. So we want to be mindful of that too. Like when I'm speaking to you about going outside, if it's safe for you to do so, then go outside if you have the opportunity. But we need to make this more accessible. This is the problem that we see in our world. And if we're talking about real solutions, we have to look at the areas in which have poverty, and they don't have that privilege to go outside and be safe and be able to experience nature. So this is where gatekeeping can also become an issue. Another example is, quote, "Is that a single-use plastic water bottle I see? You're a fraud," quote. Fact, perfect sustainability does not exist. Sometimes single-use plastic is unavoidable. So look at this pandemic for an example. Health is becoming that top priority right now. You know, we kind of go back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If some of you guys are familiar with that, we talked about it in some episodes back. But plastic-free options really aren't mainstream yet. And often in supermarkets, plastic-wrapped items are more affordable and accessible. So we really cannot shame individuals for this. And I think this is important to note too, because the fact that we shame individuals in the space, and it could be just be a mental conversation, or it could be, I don't know how it would actually come out, but in my mind, I would think it'd be something you kind of just like make a judgment about somebody for, or just if they're an environmentalist and, you know, you call them out, which I think anything when it comes to calling out, we should be calling them forward. But more importantly, why are we talking about the individual, the corporation that is creating the plastic? That's how we make true change. Okay. Another example, quote, "How can you advocate for sustainability if you wear fast fashion?" Quote, we cannot blame individuals for the systems that we live in. We have all bought clothes before the form of fast fashion stores before it came into our awareness. So wear what you already own. Yes, that's likely to be fast fashion, but the most sustainable option is what we already own. Barriers to sustainable fashion include pricing or size inclusivity. Also, buying lots from sustainable stores isn't sustainable either. Mindful consumption always. Really love that one as well. So in a nutshell, you know, anyone, you yourself can be an environmentalist or be passionate about sustainability and creating a true future for our children. It's not a competition, just to be reminded of. And you don't need to be the most sustainable person. Like, that's not even a thing. We're not looking for competition here. We are moving out of the paradigm of competition and into oneness. I've been saying that a couple times here because it is so imperative that we get that down. Competition creates separation. We need to create more oneness and sharing ideas, like sharing tips, sharing tricks, sharing hacks on ways that we can do better. I mean, I started a product line called Clarity so I could do it myself and inspire others to also reduce their plastics. And so, you know, through ideas and through ways that we create is how we make change. It is not a competition. We're not aiming for perfection. And what we really need is more people doing it imperfectly than a handful of people, zero waste perfectionists, and they're just like shaming, or just, you know, going the extremist and everything in their house is plastic free. We need millions of people doing it imperfectly to make a change. And that's what I want to leave you guys with. It's good, right? Okay. So just take that in. And pertaining to the outdoor, bringing diversity in the outdoors, it kind of lightly touched onto that. But, you know, this is something that really I've been, as a white woman, have been thinking about, because I've had multiple experiences with some of my, you know, just amazing friends. And we're outside, we're able to experience that. And to think that other people don't have that as a privilege really, really makes me churn. And it makes me frustrated. It makes me hurt. And it makes me hurt that we even had the discussion that, you know, it was a that it became white privilege to have diversity. But I wanted to get into the more history around this and how this happened, because it's really quite obvious when you really get into a movement that, you know, environmentalism as almost racial gate, pretty much racial gatekeeping, and how it's really rooted in a lot of racism. So in the history books, you know, they paint this story of these explorers that found these lands, and they were the pioneers of wilderness. And of course, these are the faces of white men. And what happened really is, much of America's green pioneering really began with the conception of the national parks, okay? Through these parks, we all go to them. We all pay a fine or a fee, maybe not a fine, but a fee to get into these national parks. But they were the epitome of untouched wilderness. For an example, Yosemite National Park. This was established through literally violent and forced migration of indigenous peoples off their sacred land. So in order to clear the areas for public use, which now we all go to, the National Park Service picked and chose which parts of the wilderness to exhibit to Americans, particularly those that framed conservationists as heroic explorers. And again, those conservationists are white men. So by expelling indigenous peoples from the environment that they had cherished and, of course, preserved for so many generations, many of our ancestors, the National Park Service lost the opportunity to learn from these environmental defenders and include them in stewardship's efforts and conservation conversations. So they really just eradicated the indigenous participation at all and rebranded environmentalism as an inherently American value, which all of a sudden paved the way for the exclusive and elitist outdoor culture that followed. So that little piece of information right there can really make, really, you know, understand how all of a sudden the environmental movement became gatekeeping in a sense. And, you know, we've talked a lot about this, reclaiming our indigenous roots and understanding, you know, from the voices of the indigena, what actually happened. And when we understand the truth and what really occurred, then we can see the root of the problem, and we can go in as the healers that we are, as the empaths that we are, and heal that, talk to everyone, have a conversation. And, you know, something that is also really profound is the most monumental environmentalists expressed their desire to conserve nature and white supremacy hand in hand. So Madison Grant, renowned zoologist and co-founder of American Bison Association, actually published an ode to eugenics in 1916 titled The Passing of the Great Race, which basically admonished an influx of immigration, racial intermarriage, and encouraged the increase of Nordic peoples in America. So this was endorsed by Hitler as his Bible and Theodore Roosevelt's as a capital book. So Grant's work actually reinforced the idea that Americans' wilderness was property solely for white men to preserve. So just take that in for a minute. It goes back to our conversation that we had around Thanksgiving and the true essence of it and what really happened and the genocide that occurs, and oftentimes how we are so blinded by the genocide, blinded by what is actually happening, and we just, you know, go out into these national parks and see them as just a beautiful place for us to be when we don't know what actually happened there. So another thing is that a man called John Muir, who is a founder of America's oldest and largest grassroots environmental organization, which is the Sierra Club, frequently scorned Black and Indigenous communities, which is really fucked up. Like, when we encountered these groups while mountaineering through the country, Muir frequently contrasted their dirty and lazy ways with the pristine animals that he cherished. So, still lauded as the father of our national park system, he perpetuates the belief that a white man being one with nature is the environmental ideal, erasing evidence of any other humans from the equation. And while the Sierra Club did issue an apology for the Muir's racist views just last week. This article also, by the way, was published in August 17th on 2020 on Gen Rise Media. And not enough is being done by the United States to acknowledge the painful history of the American great outdoors. So this story requires us to be present with it, heal it, and go into how we can create environmentalism looking forward. And the answers really begin with, you know, this modern climate movement that is striving to call on anyone and everyone to protect the planet. But how can environmentalists encourage diverse stewardship without implementing diverse media representation? So it is hard to promote inclusive care for the environment when you don't promote inclusive participation in the environment. Like, example, outdoor magazines and publications need to really break the stigma and the ideal that hiking belongs to white culture and that caring for nature is white ideal. When essentially, once again, we were not the original caretakers of nature. Indigenous people were the original caretakers of nature, and they understood the way, the spirit, that great spirit that went through and moved through. They had a connection with nature that we are trying to figure out how and what to even do at this point. So, you know, there are groups that are forming, but in my core, in my intuition, the answer for how we can truly recreate that ideal is by acknowledging that history first, what it did, and then holding space, opening up spaces, joining groups. There are two groups I want to share with you guys. If you are a Black woman or Black man, or woman of color, man of color, or Indigenous, there is a group called an Outdoor Afro Group and Black Girls Trekkin'. And they're doing a great job at really redefining environmentalism. And mainstream media, National Geographic, is really acknowledging the historical racist coverage of the great outdoors. So the conversation is there, right? But now we really get to go into our communities and see what we can do. Listen to the Indigenous peoples, listen to peoples of color, and understand what we can do to help them feel, you know, this is no longer a white game. This is, we all get to experience nature. And how do we do that? We have to listen. We have to take action. We have to heal the roots of our ancestry line and ask for forgiveness, so that we can truly step into this oneness that I keep advocating for. So this is, you know, it's a heavy topic. Hope you guys have stayed with me. Gatekeeping is something that, you know, it can easily happen. It happens in the spiritual community. I see it all the time. But I think there's important things to ask yourself. You know, if you're gatekeeping, either as an environmental activist or as a spiritual activist, why are you doing so? And how can you change your ways of thinking? You know, I often catch myself from time to time, see those thoughts come up, you know, like, oh, that person claims themselves to be conscious or woke or whatever, and they're not caretaking for the environment. And that statement it requires so much analysis, because it's an old story. It is the ego. It comes from a place of the I am better than. And then we get into separation, we get into competition. So what we get to do is tap into our true awareness, our true authenticity for who we really are. The voices that come up, acknowledge them and tell them a new story, and we get to move on with it. So, you know, if you really felt this conversation, I really thank you for listening. Again, this is a heavier topic, but it is the ship that I would love to steer, you know, this ship that we're on together in that conversation, because we can't have a conversation about sustainability without noting that it doesn't need to be perfect, that there are no rules. We need to let go of what it looks like. And, you know, you can create your own story around it. If you want to reuse all these, like, you know, store-bought plastic containers and turn them into something, great. I mean, yes, plastics aren't amazing for our health, and they can get into art and create microplastics into our bodies, you know, but again, this is like, that gets so extreme. It gets so far into the deepest depths of extremism that not everyone can obtain that. So I just want you to give yourself grace on this journey and know that whatever you're doing, big or small, is enough. Okay? Whatever you're doing, big or small, is enough. And I want you to take that in and take a couple deep breaths. Let's bring ourselves back to the presence and back to the breath and ask ourselves, what is one thing we can do today to be present, to be sustainable within ourselves, within the planet, within the earth? And know that you are doing everything. You are doing enough. You are enough, and you are worthy. I love you guys so much. Thank you for taking that ride with me and going into all these different topics that we have been exploring. We have so much that we're going to dive into this year, and we are actually coming up on our 4-year anniversary. So 4 years podcasting, you know, as many of you know, we did do a rebrand, but we are a new vibe. We are a new tribe. We are elevating the earth and the planet. And so, yeah, I'm such a dork. But I love you guys so much. Thank you for being here. And we are having our monthly gathering over on Patreon. So if you are a Patreon subscriber, can't wait to see you there. If you're not, please head on over to our Patreon page. You can find the link in our show notes below to sign up for our Patreon page. And also, if you'd like to take the Sustainable Sacred Space course, you can find the link also in our show notes below. And I hope to see you guys next week. And if, you know, I want to leave you guys with one more thing is be present, because that card just keeps coming up. It's like, just be present with where we are. We are all doing the best that we can with the moments and the time that we have. So give yourself grace. I just feel like somebody needs to hear that right now. So love you all so much. Happy day. May your journey be blessed. As always, I'll see you next week. Bye for now. Hey, tribe. If you love this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a rating and review. Whenever I get your little love notes, it really reminds me why I show up to this every single week, and it also helps us grow the show and bring on awesome guests to learn from and expand our network. Please also share this with your beloveds, share it with your friends, and follow us over on Instagram at New Earth Podcast, and that is spelled N-U Earth Podcast. I can't wait to see you over there. Someone
shining, coming with the light. You radiate, everything's alright. When I see you shining, you are a warrior of love. Oh, you are a warrior. You've got to stand strong, warrior. This battle's far from over. The road is long from here. Our love will carry you. Oh, handsome warrior. This battle's far from over. The road is long from here. Coming with the light, you radiate. Everything's alright. When I see you shining, you are a warrior of love. Ooh, you are a warrior of love. Coming with the light, you shining. Coming with the light, you radiate.